You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Kuh, and we've got a solo pod again today. Hope everyone had a good Thanksgiving. We'll be joined later in the show by pitcher list writer Martin Sokolsky to talk about top-hitting prospects that might have an impact next season on your fantasy teams, as well as first-year player draft targets. Before we get into it, just a reminder that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. We actually have our first news and notes section of the offseason. Feels like it's been a couple weeks since we've done one of these. Starting out with Aaron Bummer from the White Sox, he was traded to Atlanta for Michael Soroka, Jared Schuster, Nicky Lopez, Braden Shumake, and Riley Goins. Soroka is probably the most interesting name in this trade. After his breakout season in 2019, where he was named an All-Star and finished second to Pete Alonso in the National League Rookie of the Year race, he's only really managed to pitch in 10 games in the past three seasons due to multiple Achilles injuries. However, because of service time, he would have been a free agent after next season, so likely Atlanta just wanted to get something in return for Soroka rather than letting him go for free. Bummer, on the other hand, did not really have a great 2023. He had finished with a 6.79 ERA and a 1.53 whip in 58 innings in relief, but he does have pretty good strikeout numbers. Just couldn't stop walking batters in his appearances this year. The other name of note in this trade is probably Jared Schuster. He started 11 games for Atlanta this past season, finishing with a 5.81 ERA and a 1.5 whip. Overall, not great numbers, but he showed a little promise when he faced up against Seattle in May, limiting their offense to one run and one hit that was basically off a homer over six innings with seven strikeouts. Atlanta also traded another young pitcher, Kyle Wright, to the Royals for Jackson Kowar, who is a former first-round pick. Wright really only pitched in 2022, racking up 180 innings over 30 games, finishing with a 3.19 ERA and a 1.16 whip. Pretty decent numbers. He also won 21 games to lead the National League, so the future looked pretty bright for him. However, he dealt with injury for most of 2023, related to his shoulder specifically, and underwent surgery in October to repair that, likely causing him to miss the entire 2024 season. Unlike Soroka, though, he is under team control for three more years, but Atlanta probably just didn't want to deal with the shoulder risk in Wright, and that's why they traded him. Kowar, on the other hand, hasn't really done much in his major league career, pitched in 39 games and starting in 8 of those. He has a career 9.12 ERA and a 2.09 whip, so that should probably tell you enough about Atlanta's risk averseness in regards to the rest of Kyle Wright's career. Cal Quantrill, after being DFA'd from Cleveland, was ultimately traded to Colorado. As a pitcher who struggles to strike guys out, I can't imagine this move to altitude is particularly good for Quantrill's value. Not that there was much there anyways other than the occasional spot start. I believe his Caper 9 is like somewhere between 5 and 6, and so yeah, that's just not a great recipe for a guy who is moving to a place that is known for being bad for contact pitchers, basically. Cleveland also traded for Scott Barlow from the Padres, which I think is an interesting move considering that they already have Emmanuel Clase. Barlow didn't have a very productive season in 2023, ultimately finishing with 20 saves plus holds in 63 appearances. He does have decent strikeout numbers, though, as he has a career 10.65 K per 9, but essentially he is now the setup man in Cleveland, and he doesn't have much fantasy relevance in saves-only leagues. In other Cleveland news, the team also re-signed Ramon Laureano. There was some hype around his game during draft season this past year as a late outfielder sleeper, as he had finished the second straight year with 10-plus homers and 10-plus steals in under 100 games. There was the thought, you know, maybe if he gets to 150 games with Oakland, they obviously have nothing to play for. He could maybe get 15 homers and 15 steals or something like that, contribute as an outfielder 3 or outfielder 4 on a team. However, he dealt with injuries all season. I believe he was dealing with a broken hand for part of it, and only managed to play 105 games in 2023 with Oakland and some with Cleveland, ultimately finishing with a 224, 304, 371 slash line, and 9 homers in 12 steals. I would say the Cleveland offense is not really an offense I particularly want to invest in, but Laureano has the potential to be another sleeper. Obviously, I wouldn't prioritize him, but if you're in a five outfielder league, maybe Laureano is some guy that you look at in that OF4 spot. Luis Urias of the Red Sox was actually traded to the Mariners in the past couple weeks. The infielder spent time with both the Brewers and the Red Sox last season, but had a pretty forgettable one. Nowhere near his form back in 2021, where he averaged .249 with 23 homers, 77 runs, and 75 RBIs. Of course, now he's going to Seattle, which isn't great for hitting. That being said, though, he's going there to be the starting third baseman because they ended up trading Eugenio Suarez to the Diamondbacks. Eugenio struggled with power last season. He finished only with 22 homers, but all his other metrics pretty much stayed the same. Walk rate and strikeout rate both went down by just a tiny bit, about 1%, and his average and OBP basically stayed the same. Maybe a change to the desert will help as he'll slot in as a starting third baseman for the Snakes. Big thing here, of course, is that Eugenio, a lot of his success was coming from playing in Cincinnati. Moving to Seattle, which is not a hitter's park, was probably not the best thing for his fantasy relevance, but maybe going to Arizona, where even though they do have a humidor, it's just maybe a little bit better park for hitters compared to Seattle. Maybe that helps increase his fantasy value. One of the bigger stories of the offseason so far has been the Brewers non-tendering Brandon Woodruff. He's expected to miss most of the 2024 season due to shoulder surgery. He was projected to earn $11 million through arbitration and then was going to hit free agency next season. So the moves make some sense money-wise for the Brewers, but also the Brewers have just kind of been in a mode where they are not re-signing a bunch of their veterans. They non-tendered Rowdy Tellez, I believe, and a couple other veterans as well. Obviously, they let their manager, Craig Counsell, go to the Cubs. And it sounds like Corbin Burns also doesn't love the fact that he's staying in Milwaukee for another year. So this is maybe also just a move because the Brewers are trying to be cost-cutting this season. It'll be interesting to see what type of deal Woodruff gets and what teams are really interested in him because he's not going to play for most of 2024, if at all. Because when he's healthy, though, Woodruff is a top 10 pitcher. The only problem is, the contract that you sign him to, you're basically losing one season of that. So whether he gets a two-year deal that is, basically backloaded for that second season, or he gets a longer-term deal where a team is willing to, spend more overall money, but maybe have a lower annual average due to him missing that first year. Maybe that's what he gets. But he's incredibly elite, obviously, when healthy. But the problem is, of course, that shoulder injury. Another pitcher in the news, Aaron Nola, he ultimately re-signs with the Phillies with a seven-year, $172 million contract. Nola struggled last season for his standards, finishing with a 4.46 ERA and a 1.15 whip. However, seeing as the Nola trend the past few seasons is one good season, one bad season, I can only predict that he'll have a good season this upcoming year. Steamer has him currently projected for a 3.8 ERA, a 1.16 whip, and a 25% strikeout rate. So not terribly elite numbers, but definitely decent numbers compared to this season. We'll see if that ends up sticking for Nola. And then finally, the Cardinals made a couple deals with a few veteran pitchers, signing Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson to one-year deals. Their current rotation on roster resources is Miles Michaelis, Gibson, Lynn, Steven Matz, and Zach Thompson. They don't have much in terms of prospects who could potentially make an impact with the Major League team, with the exception of Matthew Liberatore, who honestly has struggled to stick at the Major League level the past three seasons, so I wouldn't really expect him to be, the real next option up for that team. It would be surprising if they go out and sign a couple more free agent pitchers, but clearly this team is not really looking to compete with that type of rotation. Yes, they still have Paul Goldschmidt. Yes, they still have Nolan Arenado and a bunch of other, really good hitters, actually. Tommy Edman still shows some flashes. And they have a loaded outfield when the guys are healthy. However, this pitching rotation just is not it, so I would not be surprised to see them try to go out and maybe do a little bit more for the rotation because it really isn't that difficult to compete in the NL Central, and it'd be interesting to see who ends up there. Now, seeing that this podcast is actually coming out after Thanksgiving, I'm sure everyone is busy with the holiday season, and you might be just busy trying to run around. Obviously, maybe you just cooked a huge Thanksgiving meal, and the last thing you want to do is spend more time in the kitchen. and you might be looking for some nutritious, convenient meals to keep you energized on jam-packed days. Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service, can help you fuel up fast for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. You'll save time, eat well, and stay on track with your healthy lifestyle while tackling all your holiday to-dos. If you're too busy with holiday plans to cook but want to make sure you're eating well, with Factor, you can skip the extra trip to the grocery store and the chopping, prepping, and cleaning up too, while still getting the flavor and nutritional quality you need. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes, so all you have to do is heat and enjoy. Skip the stress of meal prepping over the holidays with Factor. Choose from 35-plus weekly, flavor-packed, fresh, never-frozen meals that support a healthy lifestyle and meet your meal preferences, all delivered right to your door and ready to eat in 2 minutes. Are you looking for special occasion meals during the holidays? You can get their Gourmet Plus options, which are prepared to perfection by chefs and are ready to eat in record time. There's premium ingredients like broccolini, leeks, truffle butter, and asparagus. And if you're too busy running around to plan lunch, Factor has you covered with lunch to go. Effortless, wholesome meals like grain bowls and salad toppers that are ready to eat when you're on the go. No microwave required. Looking for calorie-conscious options over the holidays that also taste great? Try delicious, dietitian-approved, calorie-smart meals with less than 550 calories per serving. If you need an extra boost to support your wellness goals and feel your best during the busy holidays, try Protein Plus meals with 30 grams of protein or more per serving. Enjoy extra convenience any time of day with an assortment of 45-plus add-ons to suit various preferences and tastes. Choose from breakfast items like apple cinnamon pancakes, bacon and cheddar egg bites, potato bacon and egg breakfast skillets, or if you need an extra wellness boost, try refreshing beverage options like cold-pressed juices, shakes, and smoothies. With Factor, you can rest assured that you're making a sustainable choice. They offset 100% of their delivery emissions and source 100% renewable electricity for production sites and offices. This November, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered to your door. Ready in just 2 minutes, no prep, no mess. You can head to factormeals.com/TWFB50 and use code TWFB50 to get 50% off. Again, that's factormeals.com/TWFB50 and use the code TWFB50 to get 50% off your next order at Factor Meals. Joining the pod now is Pitcherless writer Martin Sikulski. Hi, Martin. How are you doing? Can you introduce yourself and what you do at PL and maybe a bit of your history of fantasy baseball?
Yeah, so I just started with Pitcherless earlier this year, around September or so. I work on the fantasy team with Matt Heckman, or the dynasty team, I should say, with Matt Heckman. And I started playing fantasy baseball probably in 2015, 2016 or so. Kind of got away from it for a while and then hopped back into it in 2019. I started writing actually around this time last year. Chris Clegg, which I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with, he posted a thing on Twitter and said, anybody that's interested, reach out to me and I'll give you some pointers. So between his guidance and just kind of starting, I have a Substack that I use. You can find a link to on my Twitter handle. That's kind of where I started. And then Miles from Pitcherless reached out earlier this year and said, hey, we're looking for some people. And I guess the rest is history. So,
very cool. How'd you get involved with Dynasty initially? Because that's obviously something that maybe people don't immediately jump into when it comes to fantasy baseball.
Yeah, so I used to just do redraft at the very beginning just to get my feet wet. But I've always had a passion for running a baseball team, and this is as close as you get without being a general manager. So, you know, there's 30 general managers in baseball, and I'm not one of them, but I'm one in my own mind. So I've got five or six dynasty teams that I've got right now, in addition to some of the NFBC stuff that I participate in as well. So that's always been a passion of mine to follow prospects and just kind of build a team from the ground up. I like taking on rebuilds as well. That's always fun. Just like to challenge myself and see what I'm capable of. So
nice. Well, yeah, we definitely appreciate all the dynasty content that the team is coming out with during this off season. Definitely helps to kind of fill in the blank spaces as we're waiting for spring training to start next year. It's always nice to get a little bit of information in on, you know, prospect we should care about and things like that. the Dynasty team has been pretty prolific at Pitcherless the past couple months. I think you yourself have helped out with definitely a few articles. In our last episode, we talked with Matt Heckman specifically about the Every Pitching Prospect article. And this episode, we're going to talk about the Every Hitting Prospect article that you helped out with, and as well as the First Year Player Drafts article that you I think are just coming out with this week. I think it's going to be published on Pitcherless. So a lot of content if you like Dynasty, but also if you like Redraft. I think a lot of these names are going to show up in both Redraft and Dynasty this upcoming season. So definitely some interesting content for people to check out.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got, like you said, I've got a First Year Player Draft article that's going to be coming out. Should have come out Monday, but we had some website relaunches that we're going to be working on. So you guys got to go check that out when that gets up and running again, probably after the holiday. Mm-hmm. And then, so that article will actually probably come out once that's back up. And that's the five players that impacted from the First Year Player Draft pool that made an impact this year. And then toward the end of the month, I'm actually going to have my top 25 deep dive into my top 25 players available in the First Year Player Draft. It's probably about a 12,000 word document. So check that out. It's going to go over my top 25 and kind of break down each player individually, pitcher arsenals, batter stances, swing mechanics, things like that. So I'll have to check that out when that rolls out toward the end of the month. So
yeah, that sounds super awesome and really interested in all the deep dives that you're going to be doing there. So we're going to start with the Every Hitting Prospect article. And, you know, for the people who didn't read this yet, kind of the gist is you guys looked at pretty much every single hitting prospect, or maybe not every single, but at least five from each team that were likely to, you know, make play in the majors in 2024. So I think this is helpful for both people who play Dynasty and for Redraft. You specifically helped out with the NL Central and AL East teams blurbs. And one of the most elite hitting prospects of that group in those two divisions, I think, is Jackson Churio of the Brewers. And unfortunately, the Brewers decided to be boring and say that he's going to be starting 2024 in AAA, although I'm sure a bunch of us were hoping he'd be starting in the majors. But he should still come up to the big league team later in the season. What do you think is so interesting about Churio's game, and why should managers in redraft leagues be excited about him?
Yeah, Churio is a fun prospect. He's a legit power speed threat. Of all the players that we're going to talk about tonight, he's by far the most elite as far as base running goes. He's a 70 grade runner. That's definitely, of all of his tools, I think that's probably the biggest, but he's a five tool guy for sure. His power, it's enormous. Power to all fields, easy power. I was doing some notes before the show. He's got 90th percentile exit velocity is 102 miles an hour with a max EV of 111. So his max EV isn't quite what you'd consider elite, but we've got to remember he's only 19 years old. So,
right.
So he was a big riser in 2022. That's kind of his breakout. He had 20 homers and 16 steals, mm-hmm. and a 160 WRC plus, which is insane across three levels. And that was at 18. So this past year, 2023, he had 22 homers and 44 steals in AA, mainly in AA. He did struggle a little bit. It's kind of been well documented about him struggling a little bit early on with the tacky ball in the Southern League. Once they kind of took that built-in advantage away from the pitchers, he just mashed. So he 282, 338, 467 slash, sub 20% K rate. The thing with Churio is he's got just 21 at-bats in AAA, mm-hmm. so he's going to need some time. But a lot like these players we're going to talk about tonight, very few players are going to hold these guys back when they're ready. So we're talking about the Brewers. They're obviously leaning toward a heavy rebuild. Woodruff's out for the year. Burns has basically said he's gone. So what's next? So we're talking about Yelich, Adamas, maybe Devin Williams. They could all be on the move. So with that said, there's going to be open spots. So if you consider an outfield, if they can move Yelich in his contract, possible. But you're looking at an outfield with Garrett Mitchell, Frelick, Churio, and then, you know, maybe Joey Weimer as a fourth outfielder. That's a pretty exciting group for the Brewers, especially in a rebuild. I just really like Churyo. Legit power speed. I think in his peak, we're looking at Ronald Acuna light. And I hate to use that comp, but he's the closest. Yeah, but he's the closest realistically to the tools that Churyo's got. But he's going to be light. He's not going to get. I don't think he's going to steal 75 bases and hit 50 home runs. Mm-hmm. But he's got legit 40-50 upside if everything pans out for him. He's definitely going to be impactful. I think we'll see Churyo sometime around the All-Star break, possibly earlier. But he definitely needs some seasoning in AAA before they get him up. And remember, he's just going to turn 20 at opening day.
Right. I think that's the crazy thing, right, is how young he is. And the hype is definitely real around him. It's funny that you list kind of those outfielders in the Brewers outfield, and you're like, well, I've heard of Sal Frelick, but Garrett Mitchell, yeah, I'm sure if you're like a baseball sicko, you kind of know who that is. Right. But then you kind of, then you're like, oh, Joey Weimer is kind of the next guy if you don't count Yelich. It's like, oh man. They could definitely use like a power speed guy up in the majors with the rest of that team. And like you mentioned, only 11 games at AAA, so still definitely some time for him to grow in the minors, but definitely one of those guys who I think will be on a lot of short lists in terms of, you know, as soon as people hear about him coming, you know, rumors about him coming up, I think the waiver wire will be a little populated and trying to get bids out for Churyo.
Yeah, he might be a target in like a DC, like a 50 player draft.
Mm-hmm. 50
deep rosters. He might be a target there. If you're taking him in like a gladiator format, you're going to take a zero for a lot of the season. So,
right.
But as far as dynasty goes, he's about as premium of an asset you're going to have as far as prospects go.
Yeah. I have his brother, so yes. I'm like hoping a little bit of Jackson rubs off onto him a little bit, but he's obviously not nowhere near the level of where Jackson is right now. So
he's going to be a quick riser though. Watch him. He's not going to be at that level, but he's a decent player. Don't sleep on Jason Churyo.
All right. Sounds good. I won't. Ironically, the next guy we're talking about also is named Jackson, but it's Jackson Holiday of the Orioles. I think this is a guy who a lot of people probably know, mainly because he was the number one pick in 2022. He's got the pedigree as well, as he's the son of Matt Holiday. Also super young. He's only 19 right now. And it looks like he's got a chance to make the Orioles opening day roster. Obviously, nothing set in stone, but I think the team has said he's going to be allowed to compete in spring training. I was looking at his NFC ADP right now, and it's like 202, which puts him kind of around the 16th round at a 12 teamer. I guess this maybe takes a little bit of prognostication for you. Do you think that is going to go up as spring training starts? And how high is too high to draft Jackson Holiday in a redraft league?
Yeah. So to answer the question about the ADP first, it's going to go up. I'm comfortable at the current ADP.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we see a strong spring, and obviously if he's formally announced as a starting shortstop, his value is going to skyrocket. I think it's going to be similar to kind of what we saw out of Jordan Walker last year.
Sure.
Where the ADP was hanging around like the 170s, 180s. And then I think he got up to like 95.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what we're looking at with Holiday. He's got it all. He's got tools for days. He's not as flashy as Churyo,
mm-hmm.
But he's got a little bit of everything. He's got that simple swing that's compact to the ball. The power isn't quite there yet. I think he needs some room to develop on his body. But long-term, he's still probably a 20-homer bat. As far as redraft goes in general, I was looking at some Steamer projections. They've got him around 255, hitting in the 8th spot in the order. I think if he's going to be up in Baltimore, I think he's going to hit higher up in the order. I can't see him hitting 8th. The bat is just too good. The on-base skills are just too good.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to adjust. He's going to need some time to adjust. But I think of all the players that we're going to talk about tonight, well, aside from one obvious one, which we'll get to later, he just seems like he's a lock to make the opening day roster.
Yeah.
The Orioles just – and it's crazy. It speaks to how talented he is because they're in – their competitive window, right? They mm-hmm. they just made the playoffs. They've got all this young talent with Henderson and Rutschman, and now they're going to bring up Holiday. They've got Kerstad. They're ready. And they're, and it just speaks to how great he is as a prospect. I mean, we're talking about a kid that was, he was just 19 last year, like you mentioned. One of four teenagers this past season who walked over 100 times. That's insane. So we're talking about a kid that's, you know, he's a 60 grade runner, which if you watch video on him, you'd say, I don't see it, right? But he's very instinctual. He's very well versed in all facets of the game. He's got that high baseball IQ. He's just a player. He's just a ball player. He looks like he's 12, but at the same time, he's a legit top prospect. I think he's the top real life prospect in baseball.
Okay.
He may not be the top fantasy prospect. We'll talk about that guy next, probably. But as far as the ADP, just to kind of round, you know, back into form here, right now he's going ahead of Willy Adames, Trevor Story, Ezequiel Tovar, and Carlos Correa. I'm okay with that in the sense of I think his floor is a little bit higher than those guys. We're looking at Adames, who's got a poor batting average. Story hasn't been healthy. Tovar is kind of a wild card playing in Colorado. Correa is not much of a fantasy value. If you're looking at guys that are, he's coming just behind Tommy Edman, Estrada, Volpe, Swanson, Bogarts. I think I'm okay with where he's at in the grand scheme of things. I think I'd actually take him ahead of Edman, Volpe, and maybe even Bogarts. Okay. And I know that's kind of a stretch. The only reason I think that is because if you look at Bogarts' numbers, he's a good average guy. But his counting stats were significantly down last year. And if we're looking at this, the Padres possibly trading Soto, those stats are going to go down even more.
Right.
Yeah. And then if you're looking at Edman and Volpe, yeah, they're good at stealing bases, but they're batting average liabilities. I just think that the batting average, Steamer's got him at 255. I think that's low. I think he's easily a 270 hitter, maybe higher. The bat to ball skills are just incredible. His strikeouts may climb a little bit, but overall I think he's pretty safe. So
yeah, and I think like an interesting thing with Holiday as well is if you happen to be in OBP leagues, I think his value actually goes up even a little bit more because of his walk rate.
Yeah, he had a 21% walk rate last season, which is crazy at 19 years old compared to a 24.7% K rate. So yeah, the on-base skills are definitely there. 442 on-base percentage last year. Played at four across four different levels, including AAA. Yeah, he's ready.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be fun to see him up there. And yeah, he has no one blocking him, so the Orioles really have no reason to not bring him up. I guess unless he struggles in spring training, so there's that. But anyways, the last guy I want to talk about from, you know, the Every Hitting Prospect article is Junior Camerino, who I think, to me at least, as someone who like participates in dynasty baseball, but I'm not like always like plugged into what's going on, I feel like his rise last season was like not necessarily out of nowhere, but it felt like all of a sudden we had a guy who's like the can't miss prospect, I guess, in terms of dynasty. And then the Braves brought him up at the end of the season. Didn't do too much. 36 plate appearances, had one homer, seven RBIs. With that like short stint in the majors, I think it was only seven games or something like that. Did that change any of your opinion on Camerino? And do you think he has the potential to stick in the majors next season?
So yeah, so we didn't get a lot out of Camerino last year, coming up straight from Double A to the big leagues. But I think that in his sample, even though it was only 36 at bats or plate appearances, I really think it shows that he's ready to compete for an opening day spot. He just turned 20 in July. But he really held his own. I know, like I said, it was small sample size, but if you watch his plate appearances, he's got a really solid plate approach. He's got massive power. The home run he hit, now granted, Tim Mesa missed out over the middle of the plate with a sinker, but 94 mile an hour sinker, and he hammered it opposite field in Toronto, which is a pitcher friendly park. I mean, this guy could rake. He probably would have had a second home run in a game he had at Fenway Park. He hit one off the top of the monster that would have been out and anywhere else, and was a wall ball double there. But he's just got it. He's got it together. My one concern is the Rays. So they're always going to raise. They're going to platoon, which is a problem. The other problem is where is he going to play? So we've got Isaac Paredes at third, Yandy Diaz at first. Caminero has played short before. I'm not sure that he's the long-term fix there. But as we know, they don't have a shortstop right now. There's a guy that got suspended I'm not going to talk about. Mm-hmm. But then there's Taylor Walls, who would have been the starter. He's now been out. He had surgery not too long ago, so he's going to be out for like 6 months. So they can run with Osalvis Basabe, who's a nice player, or they can take their shot with their number one prospect. I really think that Caminero is going to be a guy, and he's going to be a guy for a long time. I worry about the platoon factor in Tampa, mm-hmm. but ultimately they're going to do – the Rays just do what they're going to do. And it's frustrating because as a fantasy player and a dynasty writer, it's really hard to evaluate some of their guys.
Right.
But Caminero is a guy. He is their guy, and I think he's going to get a look. I'm just not sure how impactful he's going to be in Dynasty this year. But I think if we're looking more at 2025, I think he's a legit top five player at his position.
Okay. Yeah, it is kind of funny with the Rays, because I remember, we had been talking about the Rays all throughout the season. And, one of the players that always came up was like Luke Raley, who's like, oh, he's having a great season. But he only plays like 2 out of 3 games, and so he's not a reliable guy for fantasy. And then, like you mentioned with Camarino, it's like, well, he technically has 2 people blocking him, but are they really blocking him is kind of the question. Like, will the Rays allow him to play, I guess, is kind of the question here. It always feels like with the Rays, they always have just way too much infield talent, and so they end up just like basically blocking their own guys. I mean, we had this situation I think it was like last season or the year before, where it's like, oh, Vidal Bruján, is he coming up? And you really just never got a chance, and now he's not even in the organization. Jonathan Aranda's guy I've been personally waiting on for a while, and he just hasn't done anything.
I was gonna bring him up, yep.
Yeah, Curtis Meade is also in that organization and also plays third base and middle infield. So yeah, they have a lot of players to fill those spots, and it just feels like with the Rays, they're just gonna find a way to platoon, even if it doesn't make any sense to do it.
They've got so many bodies. It's kind of like with the situation the Reds are in with all their middle infield and infield talent in general. But the problem is the Reds will make space for those guys.
Yeah.
They'll move guys around. They'll move Spencer Steer to left field or right field so they can get at bats for Ellie and Noelvi Marte. And the Rays just are so stubborn in their ways. And it's so frustrating as a fantasy guy to be able to try to roster their players. You just don't know what's next. I've got so many shares of both Meade and Caminero in my leagues. And you want to pencil them in as everyday players, but you just know better.
Right. So. Yeah, because the Rays are going to Ray. All right. Well, pivoting from just hitters, I mean, we're obviously still going to talk about hitters, but now we're going to focus a little bit more maybe dynasty centric, but some of these guys that we're going to talk about are still relevant in terms of redraft leagues. Pulling from, the first year player draft article that's coming out soon, probably will be out by the time that this podcast is published. But the first guy that I want to talk about really is Wyatt Langford, who more or less has just taken the entire baseball world by storm. He was drafted third in the 2023 draft, and then gets basically moves up four levels and plays at AAA in a couple of months. He's with the Texas organization, and it really seems kind of like a foregone conclusion that he's going to be on the opening day roster, which I think is a little ridiculous for what maybe people were thinking about back when the draft was originally happening. But he really is kind of, can't miss status at this point. Is there any reason in your mind that you wouldn't take him number one overall in a first year player draft?
So to answer that question first, I literally wrote this down. I said, unless you're rostering an outfield where you have Acuna, Betts, Soto, Judge, and Alvarez, then you're taking Langford at number one in FYPD.
Yeah.
I mean, the exception obviously would be a team that's desperately in need of pitching, and then you can make a case for Yamamoto. Mm-hmm. But Langford, I literally wrote it down. Langford's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So he's 6'1", 225. He's incredibly strong. The swing is simple. His hands are explosive to the ball. And when I say a simple swing, I mean very little moving parts, very little room for error.
Sure, yeah.
He's got plus power to all fields. He doesn't chase. He makes solid swing decisions. His plate advances approach, I mean, he walked north of 20% over the last calendar year, which I'll cover in just a second. Mm-hmm. And he does run. He ran a little bit. He had 12 steals in the 161 minor league at-bats last year. I'm not sure how much he'll run in the big leagues, but he's shown above average speed and good instincts for that. He's going to have to play at a corner. I don't think he's ready. He can't play center field, but that's fine because they'll just move Evan Carter to center field. We just saw what Carter's capable of doing.
Right.
And if you consider the impact that Carter had late in the season and in the postseason, and then you think about the fact that Langford's a better player than Carter, that just shows you how big of a monster that Langford can be. So I put this out because I couldn't believe it when I saw it. So between his 100, he had played 108 games between his season at Florida and then minor league baseball. Mm-hmm. He had a 368, 491, 741 slash, 31 homers, 119 runs, 87 RBIs, 21 steals, with a 23% walk rate and a 19% K rate. So if that guy doesn't move the needle for you, I'm not sure that you should be playing fantasy baseball. So, and this is kind of along the same lines of Churio,
yeah,
and Holiday both, where no one on their roster is going to keep him from making the big leagues when he's ready.
Right.
And I don't see a way that he doesn't. Worst case scenario, they decide to play the manipulation game where they keep him down for the 10 days just to manipulate the. But I think that he's legitimately. It's going to be fun. The American League Rookie of the Year could be really fun because if Langford and Holiday both make the opening day roster and maybe Yamamoto signs with an American League team, that American League Rookie of the Year competition is going to be insane.
Right.
And so, I mean, we're talking about three guys that are all high impact guys right off the bat. I just think Langford is a no-brainer number one in FYPDs. The only exception, again, would be if you're just so loaded at outfield that you don't have any room for him, which if that's the case, you probably don't have the number one pick in fantasy for your FYPD anyways.
Right, exactly. Yeah, unless you somehow like lucked into it if you have like a lottery system or something like that. Yeah, I was like looking at the Rangers roster and it's like the only guy that's really, you know, quote unquote blocking is like Leody Taveras. And yeah, I think the Rangers would be happy to move Taveras to like a fourth outfielder role just to bring Wyatt up to the big leagues.
Yeah, and Garcia's getting a little bit older too. People forget about Garcia because he's been in the big leagues now, I think, for like four seasons. Mm-hmm. But I think he's going to be like 32. So he came over a little bit late. So he's getting a little bit older. Not that 32 is old, but as we get into baseball terms, if we're talking about, you know, 23-year-old Wyatt Langford or 32-year-old Adolis Garcia, I mean, obviously Garcia is a foundational piece for that organization. But with that said, his value is all-time high. If they really wanted to get frisky, they could play Langford and Carter in center, and then they could realistically play Taveras in right if they wanted to. It wouldn't be ideal. I think Garcia is fine there. But again, if you have Taveras as a fourth outfielder, that's going to be just fine. He's not good enough to keep Langford from playing in the big leagues.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah, that Rangers roster is just loaded both with top-end talent and with top-end youth talent as well. So it feels a little unfair right now for everyone in the AL competing with them just a little bit. I guess speaking about Langford just a little bit more, you know, you look at his stats last year in the minors. Is there anything, I know you mentioned the walk rate is kind of pretty notable. Is there anything else that kind of jumped out to you in his professional season?
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you're looking at 161 at bats to hit 10 homers and steal 12 bags, that's pretty impressive. I know that his, it's funny because he put up an OPS of 1157, which, I mean, he's 22 years old. The title of my section on Langford is From Draft Day to AAA.
Yeah.
Because literally, it seems like it didn't take him long at all.
Right.
So, I mean, I think he played 40 games maybe in the minors. And to jump across four levels and just, he dominated all of them. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even close. And so, yeah, and there's so many gaudy stats that he has. But an 1157 OPS fresh out of college is just, it's just absurd.
Right. Yeah. He like a full season at Florida. And then goes through all the craziness of the draft and then, you know, joins, plays in his first professional game, makes his first hit was like a grounder, right? Or not hit for his first at bat, like resulted in a grounder. And he was he was like, oh, that's not me. I'm just going to just destroy the rest of this summer. So
it's
kind of impressive.
If anyone's listening and they haven't heard of Wyatt Langford, or you haven't seen video on Langford, just take a look at some of the stuff that he's done. It's just really impressive. He's a complete hitter. His plate approach is well advanced. He's got massive power. He feels really, really safe. Mm-hmm. And as a redraft player, I've done two drafts already. I've ended up with Langford in both drafts, and I think his min pick has been like 91. Oh, so wow. He's going to end up being a top 100 player by the time it's all said and done.
Yeah.
Especially if he has a strong spring. By the time we draft in March, his number is just going to shoot through the roof.
Right. Do you see him kind of like in that outfielder two conversation almost? Like, is he good enough to be there, or is he still kind of more of an outfielder three? I mean, you know, whatever those terms truly mean, I guess, in a redraft scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. He's an outfielder three for me right now. I could see a scenario where he gets bumped up into the outfield two range. Mm-hmm. But realistic expectations, I'd want to have two pretty stable bats just in case, because you just never know.
Right.
But if you can start with like, like a Juan Soto, Randy Arozarena, and then take Langford as a third mm-hmm. outfielder, I think that's a pretty solid start for your outfield.
Yeah, that seems pretty decent there.
Get that base, get that nice base, and just enjoy the riches yeah. when Langford takes yeah. off.
Exactly. All right, well, we're going to switch gears a little bit to pitchers, and specifically the one guy we already mentioned a couple times in this podcast. He's the other name, I think, that's kind of big in first-year player drafts. Probably not going to go number one, but likely will go number two. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who is coming over from Japan. To you, what's interesting about Yamamoto, and do you see him making like an immediate impact in the majors in 2024?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if we look at what Kodai Senga did last year mm-hmm. coming over, he struggled a little bit early. His command is a little bit more volatile than Yamamoto's. But yeah, he's going to be an impact guy. I think the most obvious carrying trait for Yamamoto, especially at FYPD, is the fact that he's just 25. Mm-hmm. So realistically, he's not much older than your average college guy that would be coming out. And we've seen him perform on the biggest stage in the World Baseball Classic and absolutely dominate. He struck out 12 batters in 7 1/3 innings at the WBC. Guys hit 160 against him, and we're talking about the best hitters in the world. Mm-hmm. He's got a three-pitch mix, upper 90s on the fastball. The splitter is just filthy, completely unhittable at times. And when you do hit it, you're not going to hit it very far. And the curveball, there's a video out there. I think it's Rob Friedman, Pitching Ninja, put this out there. But the release on his curveball is very strange. It's almost like he's throwing a yo-yo, like releasing a yo-yo.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the pitch just completely disappears off like a big 12-6 breaker. He's just filthy. And he's done everything there is to do in Japan. He won the Sawamura Award, which is equivalent to their Cy Young. Mm-hmm. He won that three times. He won the Triple Crown this past season, which is wins, ERAs, and Ks. He had two no-hitters this year, including one of them with Major League Scouts in attendance in September. I mean, the guy's legit. Over his last two seasons in the NBP, 32-11, ERA under 1.5, WHIP under 1, 27% K rate to 5% walk rate. He's only allowed 58 earned runs in the last 364 innings, which is just absurd. Granted, there's going to be a little bit of a transition mm-hmm. coming to the big leagues. But I think he's a clear number two for FYPD purposes. It really just depends. Like I said, if you're desperate for pitching, maybe you take him over Langford, but you may regret that. I mean, mm-hmm. it's not that he's a bad player. I just think that Langford's that special.
Right.
And then the other thing with Yamamoto too, there's a lot of talk about the durability. He's 5'10", 175. He's not a big guy. Mm-hmm. Pedro Martinez is about that size as well. I'm not saying he's Pedro, but if we want to talk about injuries and durability concerns, isn't every single pitcher who toes the rubber an injury risk?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it doesn't matter how big you are or how small you are. They're like, there's just a risk there.
Right, exactly. And when we're thinking about pitching in this FYPD, it's basically him and Paul Skeens
yeah.
that are going to be the top two arms in this draft. And I just think he's safer than Skeens. And I think Skeens is a great arm, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the bidding war that's going to ensue for him, which he just got posted, I think, yesterday or the day before, I mean, we're talking about he's going to go to a winning organization. He's going to get a ton of money. I just think he's going to be a better version of Kodai Senga. And Senga was pretty darn good this past year. I think he was like SP22 overall. Mm-hmm. So I think Yamamoto's got a big impact that he's going to make. And if you can get him in your FYPD, you've got to do it. Unless, of course, it's him or Langford, then you got to make that tough decision.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely like basically top 40 potential in Yamamoto, if not even more ambitious than that. I think so. Definitely someone who's going to be interesting to see where he lands. I know there's been a lot of rumors about, you know, what teams are going to be going after him. And yeah, with the, it's kind of scary to think if like a team like the, you know, like Atlanta goes after him, or, you know, someone like, I don't know if the Dodgers are really in on it, but something like the Yankees or something like that. It's just a little scary. And I'm like, oh man, now here's this guy that I'm going to have to like worry about for like the next 5 to 8 years of ruining my baseball right. teams.
Yeah, exactly. And if it gives you any idea of his perceived value across the industry, Nick Pollock has him as his SP27 in his top 200. That's pretty impressive. I mean, Blake Snell is like 33 on that list. Yeah. And Snell just won the Cy Young. So just consider that. Consider all of it. He's got him around where Cole Reagans is, and we know how he feels about the unicorn Cole Reagans.
Right, exactly. Yeah. All right. For the last question, we're going to move off some of these maybe guys who think maybe are like consensus elite guys. But one guy I think that you kind of have a lot of love for, Matt Shaw. He was drafted by the Cubs with the 13th pick in the 2023 draft. I think you wrote about him in both of these articles. What do you like about Shaw? I mean, I feel like a lot of people probably don't know who Shaw is unless maybe you're you know, a Cubs fan. You know, what gives him that little extra X factor that makes him a guy that you like, and in your words, a top five pick in first year player drafts?
Yeah, I love Matt Shaw. Matt Shaw's a stud. Will Middlebrooks used to play for the Red Sox. I'm sure you're probably familiar with him a little bit.
Yeah.
He used to have a saying on Twitter all the time, wake and rake. And that's what Shaw does. Shaw rolls out of bed, he hits. he's an aggressive hitter. He's going to swing at the first pitch quite a bit, but he's going to mash. He's got above average power, to all fields. He's an above average runner. He's got those instincts and that high baseball IQ. He's just going to be a hitter. The momentum started for Shaw when he went out to the Cape Cod League in 2022. He won MVP that year and the batting title in the Cape. And then he went to Maryland and just raked there too. This past season at Maryland, he was 341, 24 homers, 69 RBIs, 18 stolen bases with an 1142 OPS. He walked more than he struck out. And then he went to the minors in 38 games. And still kept hitting, 357, 8 homers, 28 RBIs, 15 steals. I just love Shaw. I think he's a gamer. He's one of those kids he's not real big. I think he's like 5'10", 5'11", but he's super strong. And one of the things that really stood out to me is I was listening to Sarah Sanchez, who's well-versed on the Cubs. Mm-hmm. She was on the RotoWire pod with James Anderson a couple days ago. And she said the Cubs basically need a third baseman. And Nico Horner, I guess, is able to play there. They feel that Horner can play there, which then opens up second base. Mm-hmm. Shaw is not going to be the opening day second baseman, but I'm confident in Shaw, and I'm pretty sure we're going to see Shaw midsummer, probably around the same time that we would see Churio. He's just a player. He's just a really solid player. He's going to hit, and his bat's going to be his carrying tool. He'll be fine defensively, don't get me wrong, but the bat's going to carry. And for FYPD purposes, I wrote this down. I think other than Langford and Cruz, he's my favorite bat in this class. So in one of my leagues, I actually have the fourth pick. And I'm going to assume that I'm going to miss out on Langford and Yamamoto. Mm-hmm. If Shaw is there at four and I'm between Shaw and Skeens, I'm going to take Shaw over Skeens. And honestly, I would really have a decision to make on Cruz and Shaw. I still think I would lean Cruz over Shaw, but I think it's closer than you'd expect.
Sure.
I just think he's a big impact bat, and he's perfect for that organization. He's going to be so much fun to watch. And if you've not seen Matt Shaw, get your eyes on Shaw, because he's going to take off and you're going to regret missing out on him. So.
Yeah, it's It's interesting because he's a shortstop by trade, but obviously with Dansby Swanson at shortstop, it's kind of like, okay, where does he play in that organization? Where can he get a little bit of an opening? And I think it's interesting you bring up that comment from Sarah Sanchez of, well, you know, if Horner goes to third, then we've got a shot here. Because I was just looking at the Cubs depth chart. It's right now, it's like Nick Madrigal's penciled in at third. I'm like, I don't think they want that happening either.
They don't. She actually made a comment on there that they basically, I guess the Cubs fans call him Five Step Nicky because he takes five steps to get the ball from base to first, which I thought was hysterical. I literally laughed out loud. But yeah, I don't think that Madrigal or Patrick Wisdom even Chris Morrell can play outfield, but I don't think any of those guys are going to keep Shaw from getting there when he's ready.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Patrick Wisdom and his home run streak was a lot of fun, but don't see that being a little sustainable. But I do find it interesting too. You mentioned, you know, his stats at Maryland, and then you look at his stats in the majors, or not in the majors, sorry, in the minors, and how close they are. Like his OPS is like 1018, I think, in the minors, and I think you said it was 12 something in Maryland.
Yeah, it was 1142.
1142. Yeah, so it's like he moved from college to the pros, and basically nothing changed in his game, and he was just as good. So,
I'm gonna say if you look at the stats, he was just as good as Lankford was coming, you know, on this, and which is just crazy to think about, but he was just as impressive as Lankford was in the minors, and he's not as toolsy, he's not as big, but he's just got that pure baseball. He's just a baseball player. It actually says on his Maryland bio that his aspirations are to be a major league player, which he'll be there. It was funny to see because like it's like when I grow up, I want to be a professional baseball player. Well, Matt Shaw, it's going to happen, kid. So keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, that we didn't really talk about it, but that the 60 grade speed that he's got on Fangraphs is also kind of interesting. Showed it off a little bit in the minors, which was cool. We'll see how that translates to his game in the majors. Well, anyways, thanks Martin for coming on the podcast. Obviously, a lot of fun to talk about both redraft and dynasty in relation to a lot of these young guys that are coming out. And I think it's always fun to talk about prospects because, you know, they're the guys that we don't really know a ton about, but there's a lot that we can project and a lot that we can dream about these guys. Feel free to, if you got some other articles coming out on Pitcherless, I know you mentioned you've got like that huge 12,000 word one coming out, or if there's any other ways that people can see your work, you know, on social media or Substack, feel free to share that with the pod.
Yeah. So, like I said, I've got a Substack, kind of evaluating what I want to do with that moving forward. Thinking about possibly doing a pod at some point, but, Substack, I'm kind of slowing down. I'm going to focus some more on Pitcherlist. Got some other opportunities I want to pursue as well. But you can find me on Twitter. It's at @M_SKI22. And from there you can link to my Substack as well. For Pitcherlist, I've got the, 5 things you need to know about the FYPD class that's going to be coming out probably by the time this airs, in addition to the top 25 FYPD players are going to be coming out toward the end of the month. In December, we're looking at some other dynasty work. One of the things I'm starting on right now is going to be veteran values for dynasty leagues that you should be buying in on. So I'm going to look at some intriguing guys. I just sat Matt the names the other day, guys like JP Crawford, Wilmer Flores, Seth Lugo, just some veteran guys that kind of go under the radar that still have value in fantasy. And then from there, we're just going to keep going with our big spin on dynasty stuff in December. And then as January gets forward, we'll start focusing on the team breakdowns. Oh, and also I'm going to do a Rule 5 article coming up sometime before Christmas.
Oh yeah.
Recapping the Rule 5 draft is on December 14th. So I'm going to be putting that article out around the week before Christmas. So keep an eye on that as well. And I appreciate you having me on and getting to talk baseball. It's always fun.
Yeah, no problem. Before I let you go, I do have one burning question. Yeah. I'm a Twins fan. So where are you taking Walker Jenkins in a first-year player draft?
I've got Jenkins at 5 right now.
Jenkins at 5. Okay, that's what I like to hear.
I've got Jenkins at 5 in the article. Yeah, the article that I'm going to put out, I believe I had him at 5. Let me double check my rankings. But Jenkins is a stud. He's going to be – he's a prep bat.
Yep.
But he's got all the tools. He's definitely a very intriguing player. He just – he couldn't climb up high enough just because of the obvious talent that's around him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've got Jenkins at 5. Actually, in my write-up, I actually have Jenkins ahead of Shaw.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was just looking at my rankings. I actually have Jenkins ahead of Shaw. I wrote this article a while ago, so it took a long time to put 12,000 words together.
Oh, completely, yeah.
But, so I did actually have Jenkins ahead of Shaw, but yeah. So
that might flip a little bit.
Just disregard what I just said about Walker Jenkins.
Yeah.
No, he's going to be a great player. I'm a big fan of his, so.
Okay, good to know. Good to know I have something to look forward to, at least.
You do. He's going to be special.
All right. Well, thanks, Martin. Appreciate you coming on the show.
I appreciate it. Have a good day. Thank you.
All right. Thanks again to Martin Sikorski for coming on the podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks for more fantasy baseball. In the meantime, though, you can find us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL or send your comments and questions at ThisWeekPLPod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at TheJohnCa, and you can find Lee at Regicidal. That's Regicidal. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts, and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy what you're hearing. Lastly, sign up for Pitcherless Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcherless Discord and get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. I can tell you right now, the community is still engaged in baseball, even though it is the middle of November. So if you have your baseball itch that needs to be scratched, definitely check out the Pitcherless Discord. That's all for this week. We'll be back in a couple weeks with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Lee, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.